This is the Rise and Shout podcast, episode 116. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined first by Bill Connolly of SB Nation and Football Outsiders. He talks about what he thinks the Cougars might do in 2013 by looking back a little bit about what we really saw in 2012. He also talks a little bit about the national picture and what football analytics are doing to transform the game. I'm then joined by Matt to talk about news out of camp, including a potential QB battle, special teams preview as we look at how that unit may affect this season, and we also answer your tweet bag questions, including the chances of having a special season this year. Again, this is the Rise and Shout podcast. You can get us on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout, and you're going to listen to us right now. Okay, welcoming back to the podcast is Bill Connolly. Bill is a, for those of you that don't know him, and you should if you don't, but if you don't, he is a college sports editor, also tennis contributor, which we've talked about both times you've been on the podcast, Bill, analytics director for SB Nation, which, of course, our site, Vanquish the Foe, is affiliated with that. And you also write for Football Outsiders, which is, again, if you're not going to Football Outsiders and you're a football fan, I question your fandom a little bit. And you also are now a published author with the book Study Hall, College Football, Its Stats and Its Stories. So that's a long intro, but welcome back to the podcast, Bill.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I need to pare that down a little bit, but it only seems to be getting bigger.
Yes, well, that's what happens when you get accomplished. Mine is very short, so I know how that goes. So let's start off. You wrote a piece for SB Nation months ago now talking about BYU. So we're going to, since this is a BYU podcast, we'll start there. One of the things that I took away from your piece, which I actually kind of felt last season because you looked at the 2012 results, was this was really a 2 or 3 loss season for BYU that snowballed into a 5 loss season. And a lot of fans look back at 2012 BYU fans and say, what a terrible year, which when you lose 5 games, that's not real good. But on the other hand, there were some really good positives. So let's start there. What do you think fans might miss just by looking at one wins and losses last year?
Well, I think the thing is, on paper, last year's team was quite a bit better than 2011. The difference was that in 2011, BYU went 1-4 in those one possession games, and in 2012 they went, or excuse me, in 2011 they went 4-1, and in 2012 they went 1-4. So really, you know, last year it was more like a 9 or 10 win season, but the year before was maybe 1 or 2 wins less, worse than it should have been worse than it was. And so from a stat standpoint, they improved a lot in 2011 and they improved a lot again in 2012. The trajectory is good there. It's just, you know, at some point the wins have to follow that or, you know, the trajectory doesn't really matter much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's the context for BYU fans coming in to this year, a defense that, as you pointed out in your article, is likely to be not as good, with some personnel losses, but an offense that quite frankly probably can't get much worse. But on that vein, they are, as you probably know, going to switch. Robert and I comes back to the team after working for Rich Rodriguez and a fast-paced offense at Arizona, and they're planning on going to that. Do you know of anything where we know the first year a team goes to that? Is that a disaster? Is that they get there right away? Do we know enough from an analytics standpoint to know that that first year in a major, major offensive shift is a good or bad thing?
Well, it always comes back to personnel. And, you know, if you don't have the right pieces, basically tempo works if you can get first downs. Because that's, it starts to pile up on the opponent quite a bit. But if you're just going 3 and out faster, then nothing really matters. Obviously there's more to it than simple pace. The way you call plays changes, the way you make adjustments and audibles changes. But the bottom line is, if you've got the personnel in front of you, then, you know, you can get first downs and you can keep that opponent on their heels and wear that opponent down a little bit. And it's a very good thing. It's just, it it takes to an extreme whatever you had before. So if you're good, you can be very good with pace. If you're bad, you can be very bad with pace.
Well, you just made me a little nervous, actually. Just because they were very bad at that last year, but it's a different quarterback for, I mean, Taysom was in for a couple games last year, but.
Right. But I think, you know, the efficiency in the passing game last year was something you can build on. I do, there weren't a lot of big plays there, but, you know, again, if it comes down to getting first downs, obviously big plays still matter above all else. And they always will, but if you can, if you have an efficiency aspect to your game, the running game wasn't efficient at all. But with Cody Hoffman and everybody, I think this is a passing game that could, you know, get 7-8 yards here, stay in third and four, get the, move the chains, and then quickly get up to the line of scrimmage and do it all again. I think in that sense, pace could actually work out pretty well. So, but again, you know, if your running game stinks, then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, well, hopefully they will, they'll have the offensive line blocking a little bit better this season. So Stan, for 2013 here and kind of projection, one of the things that was very apparent last year, was how bad special teams were. I think you had, on the Football Outsiders ranked the special teams 71st in the country, which is not good, but it's something as fans we, you know, besides missed field goals and maybe a shanked punt, you just don't think as much about special teams. Mm-hmm. So what, when we look at special teams, is that again a personnel thing, or is because they have fewer plays total, is there a lot of variance just in sample size on special teams?
Well, right, yeah, special teams can bounce around from year to year quite a bit, and it makes sense, of course. You know, if you're returning 20 to 30 punts and whatever, 15 to 30 kickoffs, you know, one or two really good or bad ones is going to change those averages quite a bit. And with field goals, you know, if most teams are going to attempt between about 10 and 30 field goals. If you're on that lower end, then missing a couple, you know, affects the percentages quite a bit. So with BYU last year, the punting game was great. And they had to use it a lot, obviously, but, you know, Riley Stevenson was a really, really nice weapon. They were second in the nation in net punting. And so his absence could hurt quite a bit. The experience in other areas could help, but only if it improves. The field goal kicking was quite poor. Not only, you know, Sorensen goes 6 for 12, overall, but only two of those were beyond 40. 6 for 10 inside 40 yards is pretty awful. And you know, the kickoffs were okay. The punt returns were okay. So I think Stevenson was the anchor of that, and obviously losing him could be an issue.
Yes, yeah. I'm not really optimistic about special teams this year, unfortunately, but I think the offense will be a lot better, which can kind of cure at least some of those ills.
Right.
Let's flip gears a little bit to Kyle Van Noy. BYU fans, of course, need no introduction to the man. You, in your story in May, had his junior season highlights embedded in there. And, of course, the big highlight was at the end of the year in the bowl game when he single-handedly dismantled San Diego State. And I'm not actually even exaggerating. What do you think is the chances that by the end of the year he's a well-known name among college football fans? Because right now I think he's probably only known, of course, BYU fans, but also by diehard fans or anybody who saw that bowl game.
Well, I think, you know, A, doing what he did in a bowl game helps a lot because people do still notice those maybe a little more than other games. But, I mean, I think with BYU's television situation, he does get on national TV a lot, sometimes in that, you know, Thursday or Friday night situation where BYU's the only game. That was, what, Boise State last year. I think, you know, he has had opportunities for exposure, and he's taken advantage of them. He was great against Boise State, or he's good at least against Boise State. He didn't make a lot of plays, but he was around the ball a lot. You know, he was great against Utah. He was good against, well, he was beyond good against San Diego State. He seemed to make the most of his television opportunities, and, you know, that's how you get noticed. And of course, the other way you get noticed is if your team's winning a lot, and so people have to pay attention to you. So, I mean, you know, beating Virginia and Utah early, you know, beating, you get Boise State at home, Make the most of your opportunities there, and it's kind of like the Heisman, where, you know, individual plays gets a lot more notice when the team is succeeding.
So I noticed you didn't say beat Texas early, which I don't know if you had the schedule in front of you or were just going from memory, but I think you guys have Texas quite a bit higher than maybe the country does at large. I think they were 15th in the poll, and I think Football Outsiders, you guys had them at 8. Why is Texas going to be – why are they going to be better last year? I think some fans look at the past couple of years and go, eh, maybe Texas isn't what they used to be.
Well, getting them at home obviously gives you a chance. So, I mean, I probably shouldn't have skipped over them for that reason, but I do think that Texas is going to be very good. The bottom line with Texas is that, you know, we enjoy calling them underachievers because of the recruiting rankings, but they fell apart in 2010. They completely fell apart in 2010. And you can't just rebound from that. And basically what I've seen from Texas is, you know, in 2011, their defense was fantastic. It rebounded, new coordinator rebounded a long way. And in 2012, the offense came along quite a bit. And while the defense, you know, lost the one guy I couldn't lose, was young at defensive tackle and fell apart a decent amount. What I see is, as I think I wrote in the Texas preview, if you take the 2011 defense and the 2012 offense, that's a top three team. And that at least proves that they're pretty close. The defense has a lot of rebounding to do, but if Jordan Hicks stays healthy, the defensive line is, you know, three quarters of the defensive line anyway is more experienced than it was last year. Obviously losing Okafor hurts, but I see a defense that is a lot more experienced and right now at least a lot more healthy. And it's going to be really, really hard to move the ball on them. And, you know, the offense isn't as bad as people say or think or assume. The running game clicked pretty well. They have like BYU, they have a pretty efficient passing game. And I think the pieces are there. I don't like it, but I do think that that's a potential. That's one of those teams where if they end up, 11-1 at the end of the year, we're all going to pretend we saw it coming, right. Even though everybody's kind of down a little bit down on them right now.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's shift gears a little bit away from BYU and talk a little bit about the national scene. I was looking at that same article I referenced from College Football Study Hall comparing the top 25 to, I think it's the USA Today Coaches Poll. Yep, and then the Football Outsiders Almanac rankings. Now, obviously, you guys are doing trends and whatever else, and who knows what the coaches are using to make these rankings. But there were a couple of teams where there was massive variance between what Football Outsiders rankings have to say and what your rankings have to USA Today Coaches Poll. One of them that I thought was interesting was UCLA, which is 21st in the coaches poll, and you guys have them as 45th. I think that was maybe the biggest variance besides Ohio. We'll get to them in a second. What's the deal with UCLA? I mean, I'm with you guys. I don't know that maybe they're not 45th, but they're not 21st.
Well, the thing about UCLA is they weren't good until last year. They surged a lot last year. So what the numbers see in that situation is, typically if you improve a little too much, then you regress the next year. Like you were probably playing a little bit above your heads. And, UCLA was bad in 08, average in 09, bad in 10, bad in 11. Credit Moore for figuring out how to put some pieces together there. And I think honestly, with the recruiting he's been able to do, I think, obviously the recruits he's signed are still really young and they're only going to have so much of an impact, but I think they're going to have at least an opportunity to sustain a lot of their gains simply because of that, quality recruiting. And recruiting goes into our formulas a little bit, but I think what you see from the projections is just the fact that, a 1-year success story is still a little bit of a mirage until you do it twice. So I would say 45th is too low, but I don't have any problem thinking of them as like a top 30 or 35 team only, not, as you said, not number 21.
Well, and their schedule, the beginning, besides Nebraska, but they've got some very winnable games at the beginning of the year to gain some confidence for those younger players. Another ranking that I was very interested in, I just mentioned, was Ohio. So Ohio, you guys have ranked as 76th, and they the coaches have them rank as 40. Is this a similar thing to what you just said about UCLA? Ohio was pretty good last year, and so they're getting maybe too much credit, or is this something else altogether?
I think, you know, with the polls, we tend to, once we get to about 22 or 23, we start looking for teams to, like, looking for the mid-major teams that might end up winning 10 games. Ohio can certainly win 9, 10 games.
Right.
But there's a difference between that and actually being a top 25 team. And I love Solich. I think he's done an incredible job. Ohio had no tradition whatsoever before he got there.
Right.
Jim Grobe got promoted to Wake Forest because he went 6-5 at Ohio. And so what he has done, I think they're going to have an experienced team. I think they're one of basically four teams that could win the MAC, but that's just not the same thing as being a top 25 team. And so, that's basically the difference. And of course, 40th in the coaches poll means like two guys voted for you. That's not a very high point total.
Right.
The people who did vote for them and, you know, Tulsa, I think is in much better shape, but it's kind of the same deal where it's just, you figure they could win 9-10 games and end up in the top 25 because of that. So you toss them a bone early, but they're right now, they're not a top 25 team by any means.
So when we look at, you know, college football analytics are kind of in their infancy to a certain extent compared to, say, certainly compared to baseball, where there have been geeks like you and me crunching numbers since the 80s. But you guys are on what I think is one of the coolest things, is on this project to chart every play for the entire 2013 college football season. So tell us a little bit about that.
We're calling it the 2013 charting project here. We did last year with a couple of SBN interns doing around, say, five to eight or so games a week. We ended up charting about 110 games over the course of the season, most of the bowl games. And what charting data means, that means taking the play-by-play that already exists and basically supplementing each play with formation information. If it's a pass, how far did the pass go? How many pass rushers did the defense send? It's all interpretive. You know, when you've got a zone blitz, it's hard to figure out specifically how many pass rushers are coming or if it's delayed in some way. But over the course of with enough games, you get a pretty good, you know, it's still going to be pretty accurate. It's kind of perfect versus good. This is very good data, even if it's not perfect data. And you can just learn so much more about a team and the game of football through charting data. We did pieces about, we did a piece about the no huddle formation, like how it's used and when it's used, the no back formation. And it was really kind of interesting to see just how many teams, like, you know, teams won't use it more than 5 or 10% of the time, but if it's 3rd and 6, suddenly the no back becomes a very, very high percentage play. Like, they trust it to get 6 yards occasionally, basically. But then, you know, I did a piece about, you know, comparing the type of passes that quarterbacks throw when we looked at blitzing and how successful it was. And we want to do a lot more, basically. And so we, you know, right now we were getting a good amount of signups, a good number of volunteers. We're going to streamline the process a little bit so the games don't take as long to do. We're going to record some more running information in terms of at least just, you know, direction of the run, type of run, things like that. And, the data is going to be awesome. Basically, anybody who gets involved with it and charts some games gets access to the data and can write about their own team, can write about their team's future opponents. It's really fun data. It's easy data to understand. You know, we're not creating measures. We're talking about things like blitzes and distance of passes, things that you already know and understand. We just don't have the data for it. So, we have so many volunteers and we're always going to be looking for more. The more volunteers we get, the less time commitment it's going to be because you're probably not going to have to do a game every week. And, it's really, really good data. And I hope that people like it and then B, that people participate.
Awesome. Awesome. So if anybody out there wanted to participate, how would they just contact you, Bill?
There's a post. I guess it's sunk a little ways down on Study Hall. I'll probably bump it back up to the top here shortly. But there's a post at Study Hall that says it's basically called Sign Up for the 2013 Charting Project. You can either email me directly or you can fill out the Google form that's in that, because if you email me, I'll direct you to the form anyway. But we're going to create, we're probably about another week away from sending out kind of starting an email group and sending out mass emails and starting to figure out scheduling. We're finalizing the template and things like that. So, yeah, here in about a week or so, we'll really, really get the ball rolling. But, yeah, you can sign up there. It's a really easy Google form that just has basically like name, email address, preferred team and or conference and whatnot. And, yeah.
Yeah. That data is going to be awesome. You guys are going to have, looking forward to it as the season goes along. And then after the season, after you've got the full season of this data, looking forward to see what you guys put together.
Yeah.
To tell us you've figured out or learned by looking at that data. So one more thing before we get you out of here. So you have this new book, coming, Study Hall. Or I shouldn't say coming, it released a few weeks ago. So tell us a little bit about the book. I think it's probably a different kind of college football book than maybe fans have read in the past. So tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the first thing to know is that it's not a textbook and it's not a math book. Basically, my goal for the first book I wrote was to take the topics that I really enjoy and talk to as many smart football people about it. And so, talked to a bunch of coaches, bunch of, writers and, you know, the numbers nerds and all that and put together, something I really like. It's about one third about current events, you know, the current state of football, why people, are so obsessed with it, why it's facing threats regarding money and head injuries, things like that. The middle third is about stats. There's an advanced stats chapter, but really it's more about, what are we looking for in the box score? How can we change the box score to make it more interesting and relevant? How do coaches use stats and how should they? It's that kind of thing. It's more of a discussion than just a bunch of formulas. And then the last third of the book is things like underdog tactics and how finishing drives, the effect that can have and how coaches go about coaching that. Just tactical things that I've really enjoyed reading about over the years and I really enjoyed talking to coaches about. The theme is just trying to have an intelligent conversation about college football and I'm really happy with the way it turned out.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm sure it took a lot of your life so over the last little
Certainly.
While to get the book out, but as I mentioned to you before we got on, I have got it ordered on Amazon. It's headed my direction, so I will definitely be reading it. So let's get you out on this. According to Football Outsiders, BYU is ranked better than 8 of their upcoming opponents. If I set that as your over-under for BYU's win-loss record this season, would you take the over or the under on 8?
Over or under? Can I just take 8?
Can you take 8? You want to push? Yeah. Well, if you're a coward, Bill, you can do that.
I'm very much a coward when it comes to predictions. It's a funny schedule because there are four, with our rankings, four top 20 teams, top 15 teams, I believe. And then nobody really between about 15 and 35.
Nope.
So, 8 is really, really solid in that regard. But, the odds for an update or for an upset, getting Texas at home, getting Boise State at home, those are good shots there. And even with Wisconsin, they're at the very least a slow-paced team that you can at least have a chance of staying close to if you've got a pretty good defense. And BYU, yeah, the front seven got thinned out a bunch, but it should still be a pretty good defense. The odds of an upset there are good. It's just then you have to avoid getting upset at Utah State or at Nevada or Virginia. It's a really interesting schedule. If I have to say over or under, I'm probably saying under, but I don't like it. I think 8's a pretty good number here. It's a really nice schedule. It's a good opportunity, but it's going to be pretty difficult to get more than 8.
Yeah, I think it's going to be difficult to get more than 8. And then also, of course, depends on what you really think of some of not only those top 15 teams you mentioned, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, Boise State, and Texas, but also what you think of Georgia Tech. Are they going to be a little bit better than maybe we think they are? Or Utah State, as you mentioned, they were pretty decent last year.
They were really good last year. That was a really good win. I mean, it was an ugly win, but it was a good win. It was to pull off that game was nice.
Yeah, so it really depends. But I think 8 is the place where the conversation starts, most certainly. So, well, we didn't talk tennis this time, Bill, so we'll have to have you on again to talk tennis. I know that my listeners put that right up there with a baseball talk in their complaints when I go off on baseball or tennis. So we'll definitely have to have you on again to do that. But again, Bill, thanks for doing that. And of course, as we already mentioned, fans should go check out the book Study Hall, College Football, Its Stats and Stories by Bill Connolly. Thanks again, Bill, for coming on.
Thank you.
It's the Rise and Shout podcast, Matt. What's going on?
Yes, it is. Football is upon us, my friend.
Football is 24 days away, I believe, if I'm doing my math correctly.
I mean, games.
What's that?
Games are. But there's people wearing pads in Provo.
Hitting each other.
Yeah.
You know, I did see this on Twitter that I find funny, or at least a little funny. You know how a couple years ago fans were up in arms because they were doing less contact in practice? How are they going to be ready and all that stuff? Now nobody does. Almost everybody, pro and college, has reduced the amount of contact in fall practice.
Yes.
Maybe
they
Bronco
figured out that it actually saves injuries.
Maybe Bronco knows what he's doing. It's possible. I'm just saying. It is possible. So, Matt, we have an error. We have made a mistake in our podcast.
Oh, this is not the first time this has happened.
And it will not be the last. I'm sure there will be others in this podcast. But this one.
What mistake are you talking about?
I'm speaking about NCAA Football 14 and our proclamations that it will be the last game of its kind. That is not true.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. Twitter follower Mike West, that's @D_MikeWest, pointed that out to me on Twitter and then linked to an article on OperationSports.com, which is a site about sports gaming. And they basically said they will no longer be sponsored by the NCAA, but ESPN is reported that there would be a game called EA Sports College Football 15, and they're negotiating with the CLC, which I forget what that stands for, but it's the group that kind of represents all of the schools and their likenesses. So it would still have school likenesses and all that other stuff. It just wouldn't have NCAA on it, which I think makes it a better game, actually.
Well, I'm really for Division One college football, we don't even technically call it that anymore. You don't really need the NCAA.
That's correct. So
you can get to most of what you want without it.
We were incorrect. And despite the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit and all this other stuff that's going on that EA Sports is potentially caught up in, they apparently are going to keep moving along with it. So good news for those of us that
that's
like
fantastic
that
news.
Yes, yes.
I was actually just thinking about that today.
I'm sure.
I was playing NCAA 14.
Yes. But next year it'll be College Football 15, dude. So keep that in mind.
That's pretty cool.
So let's move on to some podcast topics. We've got a lot to cover, Matt.
A lot. Oh, boy.
So first things first, our segment Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News.
Yes, we got to come up with better segment names. That's a terrible segment name.
Yeah, and our intros are all really just us yelling the name.
Cougars in the News! The Cougars in the News! What? I just broke eardrums right now. I'm sorry, listeners.
Everybody is turning down the volume
yes,
right now.
Well, turning us off, probably. So yesterday's Deseret News, we're recording this on Wednesday night. Yesterday's Deseret News, Jeff Call posted a story about the quarterbacks. And the headline says, BYU football, Cougars... Cougars?
Wow, yes. You are on it.
I am on fire.
It is going very well for you, my
yes,
friend.
Yes, yes. Cougars working to get two quarterbacks ready to play this fall. So it goes in about how they're both getting some reps, and Coach Menonall, they're treating Ammon just like he could be the starter, blah, blah, blah. But here's the money quote to me from Coach Menonall. There's not a huge difference between Hill and Olsen.
Yeah.
So, Matt, is this just after a couple years with quarterback injuries, them being cautious and trying to get Olsen enough reps so that if something does happen, he can step in? Or do you think, take Mendenhall at his word, yeah, Hill's the starter, but there's not a ton of separation between the two?
I think both of those things are true. I think that there's a couple things at play here. One is, listen, Hill's the starter. But we do know that at some point he will go down. He'll miss a series. He'll miss a quarter. He could miss a game or two, right?
Yes.
And you want the number two guy to be ready. And they're going to do that with the reps, is kind of the approach that they're taking here. The other thing is you don't want the team, and you don't want a fickle fan base, but mostly the team and the people around him, to feel like if Ammon gets in there, that there's this huge drop off from the number one to the number two, because that will affect the way that the offense gets executed. That will affect the way everybody thinks about the play calling and everything in the event that it happens. So I think they're just trying to create an environment where they could transition more seamlessly to a number two quarterback in the event that they absolutely needed to. Do I think that Ammon Olsen is going to beat Taysom Hill out for the starting job at some point this season? No. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I
don't think Mendenhall thinks that's going to happen, and I don't think Jason Beck thinks that that's going to happen. But I do think that they feel good if something goes wrong and Hill's got to come out, that they can keep going and stick with the offense they're installing with their number two guy.
You hit it right on the head. I have nothing to add, which is very rare.
Yeah, that's really rare.
Very rare. So, Matt, we're going to move on to the continuation of our preview. The only part of the game we haven't talked about is special teams. So let's talk about special teams this year. Earlier on in the podcast, I had Bill Connolly on, who talked about just how terrible the special teams were last year, despite the fact that we had incredible punting game. Stevenson was one of the best punters in the country. Despite that, we still had overall bad.
He got some practice.
Kickoffs were bad. Field goals were bad. And the return game was below average. Okay? Mm-hmm. So lots of things. So let's start off with punting. There's a new punter in town. Is it Arellano?
I'm gonna guess that that is correct.
I'm gonna go with the true Spanish pronunciation. It might be Arellano, but so we've got that there. I have no idea, right? No idea. If him or his backup are any good, right?
No, nobody knows.
Okay.
So, I mean, somebody knows, but
not us.
I don't.
Not us. So then Sorensen as the kicker. Now last year he was hurt, much maligned. I felt really bad for the kid because I think he was trying his best, and there was just no good answer last year in the field goal and kickoffs.
And I believe it was a back injury, and I don't know how you can kick. You know, I don't know how you can kick.
I don't either. I really felt bad for him. But assuming he's healthy, he was pretty good 2 years ago. Not spectacular, but a good kicker. Do we think if he's healthy, we'll get that level of performance from 2011?
I think we will, but let's, at the end of the day, listen, I don't think anybody expects this guy to hit 50-yard field goals.
No.
You know, you look at what went on today, at least the reports coming out of fall camp, is they're kicking field goals from inside of 37 yards, and they're hitting everything. And my favorite point that came out of camp today, as far as special teams was concerned, is that they hit all the extra points. Okay?
Right.
Those are important. Those are gimmies. Missing those is very unfortunate and can create really stupid types of situations leading to losses. And so at the end of the day, all we really need is a kicker who is serviceable, will hit extra points, and can get the decent range field goals when the offense stalls just outside of the blue zone.
Yep.
Or just inside the blue zone, just in that range there.
Totally agree with you. Wow, we're agreeing too much. I may have to just disagree with you.
Or I'll just start saying crazy stuff.
Yeah. Like, I think he'll hit a 70-yard field goal this year.
He is going to break the record for field goal distance in college football.
Nice. Nice. I like that. Now I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think that's likely to be the case. I think the kicking game will be much improved if he's healthy. If he's not, again, it's kind of like the punting game. I don't really have any idea. We take the coaches at their word and saying we think they're going to be all right. Return game, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. Why can't we – what has it been the last few years? It just doesn't seem like we can get anything going in the return game. I don't want them putting Jamal Williams or Hoffman, to be honest, despite the fact those might be the two best returners you got, except in maybe some key situations where you need a big play. I don't think I want those guys back there. So is it going to be more of the same this year?
Probably. I mean, you can't put either of them back there. And I don't even know if you do it in this type of situation where you need a big play. Because unless they're fielding kicks on a regular basis in practice, it's the last thing you want to do is put them back there in a big play type situation where the ball's going to bounce off their chest or fall, you know, or off their hands on its way down. I think, you know, Fosslev is serviceable. I mean, he's decent as a return guy. I don't think he's, you know, he's not James Dye, obviously. But we've got to find somebody. Maybe there is somebody on this roster now, and we just don't know who it is yet. But there's got to be somebody. You need an we really have been missing an explosive return man for a long time.
Yes.
And I don't know. Looking at, you know, what the roster says now, I don't know that we have somebody like that. So I think you get a false live, and you get a lot of fair catching, and you get. You don't want Falsev to get hurt either, I don't think.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we can really expect a lot of real big things from the return game. I don't even know that I would make a bold prediction that we're going to return anything for six.
No, I would not make that bold prediction. No, sir.
Uh-huh. I think that'd be a little bit of a stretch.
As Rick Pitino might say, Vaisikahem is not walking through that door. James Dye is not walking through that door. 1990s Celtics reference.
Wow.
Probably not the best reference for a BYU.
Going into the Wayback Machine.
BYU podcast in 2013. So, Matt, anything out of camp you want to talk about before we move on to our next topic?
One thing I have been impressed with listening to the players talk about the change of pace is, you know, all the reporters want to ask them about the tempo and about the and how tired they are and the conditioning, and you get a lot of yeah this is really tough, but we can handle this, we're in shape for this, we're ready for this, and you know, especially from some of the, you know, I guess a lot of that's from players who've been around for a year or two, but this is a new offensive system for all of them, and especially the defensive players are all saying, you know, basically saying, hey, we've already been doing it this way. You know, I knew what to expect when I showed up for fall camp.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's encouraging to hear. It sounds like the players put in some real serious work over the summer. It sounds from some of the things the coaches are saying that this is the shape that they arrived in, both physically and mentally, is better than what they've seen in recent years. And as a fan, that's exciting for me. And it's just sucking me into all of the preseason hype that you try to avoid. You know, I don't want to get excited about this yet. It's just 3 days of practice, but that stuff is sucking me right in.
Yes, it is. I can tell by that sound in your voice, which leads perfectly to our next segment, Matt. We're going to talk about chances of a special season. Now, with this schedule, I've seen a lot of BYU fans going back and forth on Twitter, Cougar Board, wherever it may be, about if we went undefeated, could we play for a national championship? You know, this is the last year of the BCS system. Next year, the next season, will be a four-team playoff. But anyway, we'll get to that in a second. We had one email and one tweetback question that will go in this direction. The first is an email we got from a listener, Stuart Clive. I won't read the whole thing, but basically he broke down the team and gave scores to defense and the offense and special teams and everything. And he believes there's about an 80% chance of a special season. He's classifying special as undefeated or one loss, and I would agree with him. Either of those outcomes with this schedule is a truly special season. Heck, two losses, depending on who they're to. I think if one of them's to Utah, unfortunately, that probably, or to any team that's not one of the elite teams we're playing, probably mars that season and makes it unspecial. But Matt, let's talk about that. Then there's a tweet bag question from Jeff Johnston, that's at Jeff J BYU. He says, we all know BYU will go 13-0. Do you foresee the average margin of victory being 10 to 20 points or 20 plus? Now, Jeff is wearing those blue colored sunglasses as he's making this tweet.
I believe he was wearing a Quest for Perfection t-shirt when he sent that in.
Actually, I'm almost 100% sure that's the case. So to answer both of these questions about a special season. So Matt, first of all, out of 1 to 100% chance that BYU has this kind of special season, I will set it over under at what Stewart set it at 8% chance that we have zero or one loss at the end of the season. Are you taking the over, meaning better chance, or taking the under, meaning less chance?
I'm taking the under.
Oh, you're such a downer.
I know. I really am. Negative, every time we talk about this schedule, I really am, though. Anytime we talk about this schedule, I get skittish.
Yeah, I understand. If
you know, we're looking at a zero or one loss season, and at this point, you know, while I am excited about the things I've heard coming out of camp, you know, I am on record as being less than optimistic about the wins and losses this fall, and so I feel like it would be a stretch for me at this point to say that I am very bullish at all yet.
Okay, fair enough.
But we haven't played any games. You know, come and ask me again the evening of September 7th.
Yes.
You know, and maybe I'll feel differently because I will have actually seen something at that point. And we all will have. I mean, even those people who've seen practices and stuff, we don't really know anything.
Well,
more
there's,
yet.
There's always a lot of variability season to season in college because of the turnover of players, right? And in this year, we're going to have a new quarterback, pretty much. I know he played a couple games. A new offensive coordinator and offensive system. Lost a couple of very good defensive players off of a phenomenally good defense. You add all of those things up, and what you have is uncertainty, right? And if we had, like, 8 returning starters on both sides of the ball, the quarterback was coming back, we'd had a great season last year, I think you'd probably go over 8%. I also would go under 8% after all of my hand-wringing. I think with this schedule, it will be hard. We got a couple of tweet-back questions that go along with this, though, Matt. Let me find it. Jed Higginson, that's at Jed Higgy on Twitter. Of the games that he's got two questions. Of the games we are likely favored to win, which games are we most concerned about? So if you look at, you know, the games we're likely favored to win would be Virginia. I bet you were favored against Utah, Middle Tennessee, Utah State, Georgia Tech, probably Houston. I don't know if that's really even a real game. And Nevada, it's hard to say this far out, but now I'd say yes. We'd be favored even on the road at Nevada, but maybe that's not true. So of those other games, Matt, is there one that worries you more than anything else?
Utah State game.
Utah State game. Okay.
It's a road game.
Yes, it is.
It's a rivalry game.
That's also true.
And the place it's positioned in the season is a concern for me as well.
Yeah.
You know, if we head into that game 4-0. Then you're going to get their absolute very best shot. You head into that game 2-2, which is probably closer to worst case scenario would be 0-4. But let's just say you go into that game 2-2, you go into an environment where this team really wants to beat you, and possibly you've got a deflated group of players on your roster.
Yes.
So I think there's a lot of reasons right now to say, for me to say that that's the game I would label.
Yeah. You know, and that's fair. I don't totally disagree. I do think that Utah State has more turnover than us. They, you know, whole new coaching staff. Well, not whole new.
Right.
I mean, it's people left over, but still you got a new coach.
And we both lost Chase and Anderson.
Well, yes.
So we've got that in common to deal with.
Yeah. We both lost an Anderson. But theirs might be more key to their recent success.
Didn't he commit there first? And then when his dad went to Wisconsin, then he committed to BYU?
I didn't follow all that. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's how it went.
Good luck at Wisconsin.
We both lost the kid.
Badgers. I think the one I'm most worried about, if we're indeed a favorite in this one, is Nevada. On the road, the week after being at Notre Dame, if we somehow pull off an upset against the Irish, I think it will be hard because you'll have, you know, that emotional high come back, and then you're playing Nevada, not quite the same caliber. If you lose and you're still a bowl team, there's really nothing to play for, you know what I mean, at that point, because your special season's probably not there. So I'm a little worried about that one, and Nevada can put together some good teams. I don't know if this will be one of those years, but there's that. Jed also asked, which of the following is more likely to, or is BYU more likely to win, Texas, Notre Dame, or Wisconsin? This is an easy one for me, but I'll let you go first, Matt.
Ooh,
which one do you think most likely? Yeah, it was
most
easy.
Most likely.
Most likely to win. Cougars.
Texas.
I'm with you, Texas. It's in Provo.
Yeah, I'd go with Texas. I think the Wisconsin game will be tough because it's on the road. Notre Dame, I think, is going to be a really tough game.
Yes.
So I'm going to go with Texas, even though Texas is supposed to be better this year than people are expecting.
Yes. Now, keeping on this same theme of special season, Curtis Larson on Twitter, at KW Larson, asks, piggybacking off Jeff's earlier question, which we talked about a few minutes ago, when BYU wins the national title this year, there are a lot of blue glasses being worn.
People are loving it right now. They're just soaking it up.
Three days into camp. We're excited. What will the parade route be in January, and do you do one in Salt Lake City? First of all, the parade route, you need to avoid right near campus because a lot of pedestrians will get hit because people don't know how to cross the street in Provo.
Sometimes drivers have a hard time in
crossing. I'm pretty sure it's mostly the pedestrians.
Oh, okay. But not every time, because I know of at least one instance that somebody got hit in a crosswalk in Provo that I'm assuming you would say it was the driver's fault.
Well, I wasn't watching, but I did have the right of way. So, I mean, legally,
you
were
standing
at
the crosswalk.
Yes, I was in a crosswalk, and I may or may not have cussed when hit by the car. And I was physically hit by the car, though not hurt, freshman year, walking down from the now defunct Deseret Towers. But in that case, I still probably should have been watching as I crossed the street, even if you have the right.
That's very fair and mature of you.
I was not fair nor mature at the time. I'll put it that way. So
that's a real surprise.
I think the route, man, what would the route be? I think you got to go around campus, all joking aside. You got to kind of snake your way around campus. But then you got to snake your way in and around some of the bigger student housing areas, right?
Yeah, probably. But I think you got to come down I would come down a real main street. I wouldn't snake through housing areas. Mm. I'd come down, you know, like university or something, and then end in the stadium.
Oh.
With some type of like fireworks and concert, like Stadium of Fire. Yes. You parade the team in on trucks or floats or something. You bring them into a full stadium, and then you have a show.
Yes,
that's what I would do. And I would, there'd be a lot of pyrotechnics.
You are not a moron. This is a fantastic idea.
Yeah, that's the way I would do it.
And to Curtis's other question about Salt Lake City, stop it. Stop it. That's ridiculous.
Now, why would you
if BYU fans that live throughout Utah can't come to Provo for a national championship parade, then check your blue stuff at the door and exchange it for something in red.
I, I might come up from Houston for
this. Same. I might be coming from Minnesota.
If that were real, if this were really happening, I would probably make the trip.
Yes. No Salt Lake City. Plus, you'd have to deal with a bunch of Utah fans trying to disrupt things. So
no, we don't need them. You know what I mean? There's a lot of Utah fans and whatever.
Yeah, keep it Provo. I'd go to Cedar City before I went to Salt Lake. All right.
St. George.
I'd go to Payson.
They had a really big turnout for the Cougar days, whatever those events they did, those road shows. Yeah,
pretty cool.
They had a pretty big turnout down in Southern Utah. So maybe something down there.
Yeah, there may be something. Well, a couple other Twitter questions. We had one from Michael McQuain at, Cougar Lover, right?
But Cougar Lover. It's really, it's not that complicated. I know, I mean, just took out a couple of the vowels. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, and changed letters. K-U-G-R. Anyway.
Yeah, that's.
Michael asks.
Really tricky.
Michael
really
tricky asks, let me see here. Do you feel podcasters can improve their credibility by one, actually going to the games? Ouch, Michael. Ouch. And two, tailgating before the games. Well, let me address the first part of this question. Michael, who said we were shooting for credibility?
Yeah, that's a long-standing tenet of this podcast.
This podcast is not about credibility. So the biggest problem, though, Matt, is we live in Minnesota and Texas.
Yes.
If we were there, I am on record many times as saying the next time I attend a game in Provo, which will not be this year, unfortunately, but will happen eventually, maybe in 2014, I will be at the tailgate. There's 100% chance of that. But not this year.
I think the tailgating thing is brilliant. And anybody who goes to games should be going to tailgates. It is, you know, having spent a couple years at a school where that's kind of part of the football culture, it's a lot of fun. And I'm going to be tailgating in my driveway, actually, this fall before BYU games.
Amen, brother.
Just because, you know, it's fun and I like to grill and
light stuff on fire. Yes. So Matt, we're gonna get out on this. There was something I wanted to do, but we are out of time this week, unless we want like a 2-hour podcast, which I don't think anyone can endure that. Justin Sweeney asked, that's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. My last two trips to Lavelle Edwards Stadium were 09 FSU, got killed, and 2011 Utah. That one was even worse. Which game should I attend to ruin the magical season? So I've got an idea for you, Justin. Hear me out here. Idaho State.
Oh, jeez.
Because he can't mess that one up, right? I mean, even his powers of losing and humiliation at Lavelle Edwards Stadium cannot overcome the massive talent gap between us and the Bengals of Idaho State.
Now you've done it.
I've done what?
You've jinxed it.
Yes.
That's exactly what you've done now.
Yes.
Look, you can't play around with these things.
Me saying this had some cosmic effect on our chances of beating a lesser, much lesser team. And I'm being
Messing with the time-space continuum.
I like doing that.
Okay. I don't know.
I have a DeLorean in the back.
You guys are inviting disaster here.
Yes.
And I'm not just saying this because I recently lost a game to Idaho on NCAA 14. What? That's not the reason I feel this way.
Did you seriously do that?
I don't want to talk
about
it.
You should have your card taken away.
It was an 11-1 season. I shouldn't have been playing the game. It was.
You have excuses. You're full of excuses.
Anyway, but I'm just saying you can't say like, oh well, it's this guy's bad luck. Let's stick his bad luck on this game because I mean, there's no way we'd lose to this team.
Yes, I can say it. I just said
for
it.
You're asking for it.
You're being ridiculous.
You're embarrassing us all.
There's embarrassment happening right now. There's no guarantee. There's a guarantee of that. Well, anyway, Matt, we are out of time. Next week, we're going to talk about an awesome special they had on BYU TV Sports, the top 50 football plays of kind of all time. Watched it this past weekend. It's fantastic. We're going to do a draft of our favorite plays. So everybody tune in. If you haven't had a chance to see that show, go to BYU TV Sports. Is it .com?
Yeah, you can go to the BYUTV.org website.
Or on your app, on your mobile device, and watch this show.
One of the greatest things ever made for television.
Yes, it was one of the greatest hours of my life, which
maybe doesn't say much about my life, but.
Well, it does. It says a lot about your life.
Says I probably had a lot of other awesome things because this was even awesomer.
That is one of the possible conclusions that could be drawn. I'll go with you there.
So definitely check that out. We appreciate you listening and downloading. If you want to tweet at us, that's at @BYU_RiseShout. Tell us what you thought of the podcast. Give us questions for next time. Thanks again, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.